And we'd love to welcome you to a Fair Recovery Radio tonight and hope you're all having a wonderful holiday weekend. My name is John Haney, and I'm here with my wife, Leslie.
Good night.
And we're going to be your hosts this evening. Rick, our usual intrepid leader, is actually taking a much-needed and probably much-overdue rest from his work tonight, so Leslie and I are going to be flying the plane solo tonight. But I did want to say kind of on the front end, sometimes when it's a holiday, it sort of reminds us that that when things aren't going so well in our lives, that sometimes the pain can be even more intense during a holiday period. So I know there's a lot of people out there right now who are taking the day off tomorrow and planning to barbecue or maybe take the family out somewhere. And if your world is falling apart right now, this may not feel like such a great time for you. And we hope that that you'll be seeing better days soon, and hope that you'll find some reason to be hopeful out of what we speak tonight.
Well, and tonight we're going to be talking about the 20 most common mistakes that the betrayed spouse makes. As we begin this evening, I want to remind those of you who are listening who may not be familiar with our stories. Both John and I have been betrayed in our marriages. We're currently married, but we both lost our first marriage to affair partners. Our spouses left us and married their affair partners. So we've been on this side of the equation, and I just want to put that out there.
And if I might jump in there, I know that everybody's pain's a little different too. You know, I mean, we may be able to empathize a little with what you're going through, but we know that each situation is very unique, and you know, we might be able to feel a little bit of that pain, but you know, one thing that I remember is there were times when everything seemed to be spinning out of control that I certainly wondered if ever life could look normal again. And, you know, it wasn't easy, but you know what? It really does now.
Right. And as we talk about these mistakes, if you've done some of them, please have grace with yourselves. The reason they're common is because a lot of people have done them, see them in our practice every week, and actually most of these I did myself after my first husband left me for his affair partner.
Yeah, and I think I'd probably throw in there too that I don't know anyone who gets married expecting to be cheated on or expecting to have their marriage come down in flames around their heels. And it's just, this is something that's not in the instruction manual, something you don't talk about in premarital counseling or expect. And so when it hits people, they tend to be totally blindsided by it. It's just something that you don't even expect. And some people, you know, some of our listeners who are going through this, you know, you may have had some indications that something was coming, or you just had this sort of gut level feeling that your husband and wife wasn't being completely honest. But for other of you out there, you know, you were probably completely blindsided by your husband or wife's infidelity, and that was a whole different thing where you just thought everything was fine. And then suddenly a very ugly truth came out.
Absolutely. So
you ready to roll?
Yes,
okay,
please.
Well, the first one we're going to talk about, as we talk about the 20 most common mistakes that a betrayed spouse makes, is that believing that once your spouse has agreed to end the affair or the behavior that they're doing, is that it truly ends for them.
So I guess as we just started off this evening, John, why do you think people do this so frequently?
Well, I guess from my observation and so forth, I mean, my gut feeling on that is just that you know, when your husband or wife is involved in something that you didn't know about and suddenly find out about it, you know, just what I was talking about a moment ago, it just really can rock your world. And it can feel like you're, you know, the carpet's pulled out from underneath you and everything's sort of reeling. And when someone's in that state, I think they're looking for stability. They're looking for something that feels like normalcy again. And so I think they're looking for some kind of reassurance that it's going to feel like it's going to right the ship again and everything's going to be okay again. And, you know, they may not go into a whole lot of detail about, you know, kind of thinking it through and so forth, but I think they just want everything to settle down. And so, you know, they're looking for reassurances, and they'll ask, and they want to believe beyond all hope that what their spouse is saying is true and right, because to think the alternative would just be unthinkable when they're in that state.
Well, and I guess the thing that I would add, because this is actually a mistake that I made in my first marriage, I did believe when my ex-husband told me that he was going to quit the affair, that he was really sorry, that it was over, I really naively believed that he could just flip a switch. But particularly if your spouse is in an emotionally entangled affair or has a sexual addiction, it's going to be a little bit more complicated than that. They can't just flip a switch, stop feeling, or stop acting out.
Right, and I think that the person's not necessarily lying intentionally when they say that they're planning on stop, because I think sometimes their intention is very much that they are going to be able to stop the behavior, and they really want to. Or maybe if it's something like, you know, a compulsive acting out pattern with pornography or with prostitutes, you know, they may have hit that point many, many times where they said, this is the last time, I'm never going to do it again, and maybe they really believe that since they got caught this time, that it absolutely will be the end.
I would agree.
And the second one we're going to roll into is somewhat like the first, and that's that, you know, demanding that your spouse pledge 100% commitment to the marriage at the time of disclosure. And
well, because going back to what you said just a minute ago, John, they may even in that moment feel like they can 100% commit. But the problem is, usually with any kind of affair or addiction, part of them wants one thing and part of them wants the other thing. So they're really not 100% anything. And so even if the moment they mean it, it's not really a guarantee that that's where they're going to stay for the next day, the next week. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, and I think you know, one of the things I think that's really sad about that, kind of going back to what we're talking about wanting that reassurance, you know, the person's actions may totally speak otherwise to their words, but you want so desperately to believe that's true and everything's going to be okay again that you just tend to look the other way sometimes. And rolling into number three, the number three most common mistake that a betrayed spouse makes is bludgeoning your husband or wife with God's word, thinking that somehow that's going to be helpful.
Well, and I think that this is a really common one, and I'm sure I did this one in my first marriage also, because, you know, part of me so desperately wanted to preserve my marriage, to preserve my family, and was devastated at the thought of everything blowing up, that I felt like if I could have God on my side, then I could win. And, you know, God is on your side, but it doesn't mean that beating up your spouse with God is going to be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the betrayers that I have worked with, you know, one of the things that allows them to do that behavior in the first place is justifying and sort of rationalizing why they're doing what they're doing. And, you know, if it's a person with any conscience at all, you know, they have to believe that they were driven to it sometimes, that something in the marriage was so bad that it could justify their behavior. And I think sometimes if they're really feeling guilty when the wife or the husband really just starts, you know, lambasting them with guilt and with, you know, you should be doing this and you should be doing this and God says this and God says that, you know, in their guilt, they're not going to be able to hear that. And they're going to kind of turn that around sometimes and you know, use it as justification. Yes, they really are this really unreasonable person I thought they were, and this really explains why I checked out of the marriage in the first place.
And at the same time, if they have been wrestling with God a bit, if there have been moments that they realize what they were doing was actually completely against what God was telling them to do, realizing that didn't keep them from doing it, and so beating them up with it afterwards isn't going to keep them from doing it either.
Right. It's just it often make them very angry, make them very frustrated, and when we say bludgeoning the person with God's word, we're usually talking about the really kind of the harsh, judgmental, this is what's going to happen to you for doing these bad things. There's usually not a whole lot of grace and forgiveness being talked about at that point.
Well, and I've actually had spouses tell their mates that they were going to go to hell if they didn't quit the affair. And although I don't believe any affair is what God desires, I don't see anything in God's word that says people are going to go to hell for that.
Yeah, but anything sort of based on fear and guilt and shame usually is not going to have a really good outcome as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree. Not going to keep him from continuing the affair.
That's right. So let's go on to number four, and that's placing too much confidence in changed phone numbers and email addresses.
And I see this one a whole lot. I think that a lot of spouses, because they want reassurance that it really is over, that they're safe, that they're going on, they think that, you know, if they change the phone number, if they change email, it's all done, the door is closed. But a lot of times what happens is they do it too quickly. They'll do it maybe the first day, the second day, and the other person still hasn't really disengaged from what they're doing. And so then they'll go get another cell phone, they'll go get another email account, and so a lot of times the affair will continue anyway.
Yeah, and with so many different ways of communicating electronically now and different ways of keeping emails at work and, you know, separate accounts and everything, it's, you know, unless you're really A-grade cyber detective, you know, good luck trying to keep up with someone who really has the intent of you know, finding a way to sneak around the back door and communicate with the person.
Well, and once again, as we're sharing these things, we're not trying to raise suspicion, but I also want to give you a realistic view of what recovering from an affair would look like. It does take time. It takes disengagement, recovery, perhaps help from a qualified professional. A lot of times people just think, well, they'll quit doing this and things will go on and we'll be fine. And I know that that's what I did.
Yeah. And also, you know, once again, no one's really expecting this sort of thing. And we get, you know, talk to betrayed spouses a lot. And one of the things we'll always hear is, how could I have been so stupid? How could I have ever made this mistake and not seen it? You know, but when you're not looking for something like this, why would you? You know, how could you see it coming? And so, you know, if you're going back and sort of second-guessing all the things you should have done or could have done or might have done differently, you know, have a little grace with yourself, because, you know, no one really expects this to come, and you know, you had no reason to mistrust that person, perhaps. And so, you know, why would you be looking at their email accounts or their phone bills or those sorts of things?
So did you feel stupid when you found out?
Did I feel stupid? Yeah, I did, actually. I felt pretty duped and – you know, since it was a person I knew, and you know, I absolutely did.
So once you discovered what was going on, did you look back and begin to see things you hadn't seen before, or were you completely?
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, and I very much had that reaction. It's like, oh yeah, well, duh, you know. But it totally flew, you know, beneath my radar when it was all going on.
Which happens over and over again. I had a client in the office just this week whose husband was disappearing, not coming home, and I just said, you know, have you ever thought he might be having an affair? And she said, oh, no, not my husband. He's a good Christian man. He's in ministry. And so you're not alone if you've been in that place.
So we're up against a break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes going on with the 20 most common mistakes that a betrayed spouse makes. You're listening to Affair Recovery Radio. And welcome back. I'm John Haney. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Leslie. And tonight we're talking about the 20 most common mistakes that betrayed spouses make. Well, getting along with our 20 most common mistakes, number five is believing that you can keep your spouse safe and away from temptation.
This is a really tempting one to believe, because fear will have its way with you. Once you find out your spouse has been lying to you, cheating on you, you want to be able to, you want to think you can do something to guarantee it will never happen again and that it's over. And even if you work together, there's no way that you can ever guarantee that you're going to keep them from temptation. A lot of times I'll joke with the women in my group about, you know, you can't send your husband to the planet of the boys. You can't. And going back to Shirley Glass talking about affair-proof marriages and her comment that you can't affair-proof a marriage, you can only affair-proof yourself. You can't affair-proof your mate. They're going to have to take some responsibility for it themselves. But it's going to be scary for a while, because First thing you have to know is that they want to do it. Then you need to know that they're able to do it, and then it needs to last for a while before you're going to be able to believe it. But you cannot take responsibility, and you can't keep them from temptation.
Yeah, and we've even actually heard of Sunday school classes that, you know, talk about how to affair-proof your marriage and things like that, or how to be in an affair-proof godly marriage. And, you know, one of the things that's problematic about that, in some ways I think it puts the blame on the spouse, because if their husband had an affair or their wife had an affair, it means they were doing something wrong. They somehow failed in affair-proofing their marriage.
Well, and it can also, leading into our next most common mistake, it can lead to putting too much pressure on the betrayed spouse to be enough to keep them in the marriage after the affair.
Oh, definitely. And it also puts them in a position of having to become their, sort of their probation officer. You know, to be checking up with them all the time and to be kind of following their tracks and being suspicious all the time. And that's a horrible place for someone to be in.
Well, it's a horrible place for two people to be in, both the betrayed spouse and the unfaithful spouse, because then the marriage just becomes a prison.
Definitely. So, I mean, you know, that's one message. If you hear nothing else tonight, you know, if you've been in a marriage and your spouse has been unfaithful, you know, not to blame yourself or think that somehow you should have done something differently or they did it because of you. It's just not true.
Right.
Well, number six is trying to compete with the affair partner or the pornography or the prostitutes or whatever their sort of drug of choice was.
Yeah, I have had clients, and it's all with very, very good intentions. They think, well, if I can be as much as the affair partner, good enough, sexy enough, hot enough, whatever it is, then they'll come back and they'll stay. But the problem is that it puts too much pressure, kind of going back to the last one, on the person who's been betrayed. And sometimes they allow themselves to even be a little bit abused. I had a client a while back who had discovered that her husband was using pornography. And she was pretty upset about it. And he promised to stop, but that she needed to be more exciting in their sexual relationship. And actually, what she allowed him to do to her was painful to herself and demeaning, and she wasn't comfortable with it at all. And so really, she was letting him sexually abuse her to try to keep him from using pornography.
Yeah, this is one of the more tragic ones that we see, because I think sometimes in an effort to keep their spouse, someone will start compromising their very sense of who they are. And that's just a tragic thing. They'll start doing something that's way outside their comfort zone in an attempt to kind of lure the person back in or try to sort of be exciting enough for them. You know, we've had cases where someone will bring a prostitute into their bedroom, you know, because that's something the husband wanted, or, you know, and they just felt like they were completely humiliating themselves while they were doing it.
Because, you know, depending on the type of affair, once again, if it's a prostitute versus a marriage, it's apples and oranges. That's true of any affair. You can't compete with pornography or an affair, because an affair has a whole different paradigm that goes along with it.
And we could probably, you know, talk all night on sort of the whole biochemical shift that happens during an affair or when using pornography or something. But in terms of sort of the high that it produces and so forth, it's almost like trying to compete against heroin. You can't do it.
Well, and a lot of times, truly, the affair partner is less attractive than the mate. And so that's just kind of a whole different issue. But it's not that the affair partner is always better than the mate. People do usually affair down, whatever that looks like.
Most definitely. And the number seven mistake that a betrayed spouse commonly makes is trying to trash the affair partner.
Well, going back to the ambivalence and that they're not 100% anything. Actually, none of us are ever 100% anything. But the spouse who's been unfaithful, you know, 50% of them may want the marriage. 50% of them may want the affair. It could be 80-20. It's going to be shifting back and forth a lot. But when you trash the affair partner, a couple of things happen. The first thing is you hit the wrong side of the ambivalence. The second thing is sometimes the unfaithful spouse begins to take responsibility, but it sounds like they're protecting the affair partner.
And just for our listeners who aren't familiar with that term, you know, could you explain what that means, hitting the wrong side of the ambivalence?
Well, kind of going back to ambivalence is you want two mutually exclusive things at the same time. So you may want the marriage, you may want the affair partner. And so hitting the wrong side of the ambivalence, if they're 50-50 and they trash the affair partner, then they're going to be pushed away from their spouse. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, I think in some ways it's like when your daughter brings home that horrible boyfriend that you're so, you just never want to cross your doorstep. You know, the more you try to tell him how horrible this person is, the more she's going to desire to be with him. It sort of feeds that desire, you know. And they say sometimes as parents, you know, the best thing you can do is really befriend this person and act like they're the greatest person in the world. You know, and not that we're encouraging you to do that with your with your spouse's affair partner.
Yeah, but going back to the teenage kid who's dating, you know, the boyfriend with all the piercings that you don't like, they may not be that wild about him either. But the minute that you go after him, they're going to be protective. Oh, so definitely. I think that's a really good picture.
That protectiveness kicks in, that sort of, you know, no one's going to tell me what to do aspect kicks in, that pride and so forth. So it's just doesn't tend to end up very well when you try to do that. And eight's very much the same way in that it tends to have a really bad outcome. And the eighth mistake is trying to convince your spouse that nobody will ever love them as much as you do.
If they're in an affair, they may already believe that somebody loves them more than you do. But if whichever way you look at it, there's kind of an emotionally abusive aspect to trying to convince somebody nobody's going to love them more than you.
Yeah, well, I think the underlying message of that is you're a loser. I mean, you're unlovable, and you're a pretty sorry excuse for a human being. And if you lose me, you know, that's it, because no one's ever going to, you know, I'm the only one who can somehow tolerate you.
Right, but even though that's not what you're saying, because truly, if you have been betrayed and you're still willing to love your spouse, then you're capable of great love and great acceptance. But that's not what they're going to hear if you say that.
Exactly. And their shame, they're going to tend to hear the shameful kind of response, and their natural reaction is going to be, well, I'll go out and I'll show you that I'm not a loser. You know, I'll show you how these other people can respond to me and how much they love me so much more than you do and appreciate me.
Right.
So rolling on to number nine. And this is one that's particularly destructive as well, and that's using your children as pawns to manipulate your spouse into staying, or using them to punish them if they leave.
Right, and a lot of times people don't intend to actually use their kids to make their spouses stay, but they'll threaten them. They'll say, if you leave me, I'm going to make sure you never see your kids again. You know, if you stay, then we'll be a family. And so they'll threaten the spouse with the kids and the loss of relationship with the kids. And although, you know, that's pretty tempting, it's not so helpful. And if your spouse really is intent on leaving the marriage, please remember that the best thing for your kids is to have the best possible relationship with the other parent that they can. That you don't want to punish your kids as you're trying to punish your spouse.
Yeah, and I think I'd have to jump in there and say that also not everyone's intent is bad with that. I mean, I think a lot of people use their children and threaten, you know, that you're not going to see your kids again and so forth, not using the kids as pawns so much, but they may really believe that since this person has chosen to be in a destructive lifestyle that they want to shelter their children from that, you know, and so they'll threaten to say, you know, I will make sure my lawyer will never let you get anywhere near these kids, and you know, For a parent, the thought of a child, their own child, being with potentially with somebody else as a step parent or as a live-in boyfriend or girlfriend, I mean, that can be a terrifying kind of thing. And so sometimes people's motives are good in their mind about trying to protect their kid and shelter them from the affair partner or from the lifestyle choice that the person has made.
But I did have a client a while back. She actually was married to a man who was not the biological father of her children, and she had grandchildren from those children, and he was involved in a very emotionally entangled affair. They'd been married for quite a while. They had grandchildren together, and this lady was threatening him to never let him see the grandchildren again if he left her, and the grandchildren were quite close to him. It didn't keep him from staying with the affair partner, and nothing was really gained by it.
No, and it gets to be so complicated when kids are involved in any capacity, or you know, and there's different things that can happen with children of different ages, and that's probably a show we really need to be doing pretty soon. You know, is talking about aspects with the kids and what do you do with children in a situation like this. But you know, for those of you betrayers out there, you know, just sort of a word of warning, it really can change your relationship with your kids and you know, can cause some real damage. Not that it's irreconcilable or that you can't find some healing and forgiveness. Absolutely you can. But don't think, I think sometimes, you know, and this is the crazy thing we hear very often is, you know, the person who's having the affair is so emotionally wrapped up in their affair, and they think this person's the greatest thing since sliced bread, that they just automatically assume that their kids are going to think so too, that they're going to have no problem with the fact that this person's destroying the household, and think the kids are just going to take to them the same way that they did.
So I think we're back on break.
Welcome back. I'm John with my wife, Leslie, and tonight we're talking about the 20 most common mistakes that betrayed spouses make. And the number 10 mistake that, while we're kind of talking about kids, is putting your kids in the middle of things or using them as confidants.
Well, and a lot of people, in their pain, unintentionally begin to talk to their kids as peers, as friends, and begin to rely on them. But I recently had a client come in, and her dad left her mom when she was 12. And her mom was devastated, but what her mom had this 12-year-old girl do, she would drop her off at the house of the affair partner while her father was there, have her go to the door and beg her dad to come home. And so, yeah, she's, you know, 20 years later, she still has a lot of pain connected to her parents' divorce because her mom in her pain used her to try to get her father back. And though that's kind of an extreme case, there are a lot of very, very sweet, well-intentioned people who just let things slip out or begin to complain to their kids about their spouse and say, you know, you wouldn't believe what your father or mother is doing. And even if your child is an adult, I would say it's still inappropriate. You don't want to put them in the middle of your marriage, even if as it's falling apart.
But just like everything else, if you've done this, you know, have a little compassion for yourself too, because, you know, we've talked about sort of the grief and the reaction from infidelity can be a very isolating kind of thing. I mean, sometimes you feel like your typical allies and friends and family members sort of distance themselves because they don't know what to do. And sometimes a lot of people feel like their kids are the only ones they can really go to. They're there, you know, and so they may not always know that they're doing that, if they are dragging their kids in or saying more than they hope to, you know. So if that has been your experience, you know, it's okay. It happens.
But it also may be good to go to your children and tell them you're sorry and that you're not going to do it anymore and that it wasn't the most loving thing for them.
So rolling on to number 11, and that 11 most common mistake is threatening, because you believe that threats will make your spouse see the light and perhaps convince them to fly right.
Well, and this kind of goes back to the ambivalence. If part of them wants the marriage, part of them wants the affair, threatening is always going to push them away. Whatever you're threatening them with, they're just going to push away from you. And if you're threatening them over and over and over, actually, if God's trying to talk to them, you may be so loud in their ears they can't even hear God, because all they're doing is emotionally reacting to you.
Yeah, you definitely want that sense of conviction and that sense of guilt come from God, not from you. You know, and again, shame never tends to work out the way we want it to when we try to use it as a weapon.
It's true, because a lot of times we'll try to beat our spouses up with guilt. But guilt's never going to make them do the right thing, or hardly ever. I don't want to be too emphatic.
Right.
Sometimes it will.
Yeah,
but
there's always an exception.
But usually it's not effective long term.
Right. Number 12, trying to drive the affair partner off by confronting them.
I have had a lot of clients try this one, both male and female. And somehow they think that if they talk to this person, explain to them the pain that they're causing, the damage that they're doing, that the person will suddenly be sad and back off. A lot of times what happens is the opposite. If the person who is betrayed goes to the affair partner and begins to beg them to back off, the affair partner suddenly thinks, you know, maybe I have more power than I thought. Maybe this person will leave his spouse for me or her spouse for me.
Yeah, what's that old country western song, Jolene by Dolly Parton, way back in the day, you know, talking about that very thing, begging you, please don't take my man or something like that. But yeah, and I think the other thing that happens sometimes is, you know, it actually kind of kicks up a competitive dynamic that wasn't there before. You know, suddenly you've got these two people are competing for this man or for this woman, and you know, and instead of getting them to see that their actions are wrong or anything, it makes them sort of dig their heels in even more and see you suddenly as the enemy, and they'll redouble their efforts to try to win the person.
Yeah, because another thing that we've talked about in earlier programs is that a person in an affair isn't thinking rationally anyway. A lot of times they've come up with different rationalizations, justifications for what they're doing, and so they're not in their right mind. And so you're trying to rationalize with a person who has a fair thinking anyway, and it's not going to be effective.
Right. That's absolutely right. Well, this next one's sort of like that, Leslie. That's the contacting the affair partner and then believing what they tell you.
Right. Because I do have a lot of clients who will find out about an affair and their spouse has told them a story. And then they call the affair partner to verify the story. So they want to make sure that their spouse has told them the truth. And then they think the affair partner is going to tell them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're really confused because they're not even any closer to the truth than they were to begin with.
Right, but you know, just don't expect the affair partner to be a good character witness to what's really going on. You know, and what surprises me about that one so much is if you've got someone who's been sort of a party to a lie for so long, you know, what makes you think that suddenly they're gonna fess up and tell the truth to you when you confront them?
Right, because the other thing that happens is if the spouse is sexually addicted and they've been using their affair partner, they may have told their affair partner they love them to get what they want. And then the affair partner may believe that they love them, that there was a chance at marriage, that they had a future. And so, I mean, the betrayed spouse's head will just start spinning around because they don't know what to believe, which way's up, was it love, what was it? And they don't know what to do with it.
Right. Yeah, so it's just not a good idea to go there for answers.
No, and potentially there may be the day when God, at the center of it, would have you talk to the affair partner, but generally I tell people it's going to be after you have forgiven them.
Yeah, and there are situations out there where the affair partner was every bit as much duped as the spouse was. You know, that they may have thought that this was a single person because the husband or wife was lying to them too.
That's true. I've had quite a few clients who thought the person that they were involved with was single or separated or in the middle of a divorce. I actually had client a while back who was dropping the guy she was dating off for counseling, and she didn't know he was seeing his wife for marital counseling at the very same time.
Mm-hmm. Number 14 is believing that there's a simple formula or a set course of action to fix the problem.
Well, I think we all want a formula. I think we want to know if I do A, B, C, D, E, then I'm going to get something at the end of it. And I remember when I was going through my own recovery and finding out about my ex-husband and his affair, and I was in counseling, and this therapist set me up with another lady who was farther down the road. And I remember asking her, so what can I do? You know, what are the steps? And she told me, you know, you really need to go to the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit's the ultimate counselor, and she was right. But I think a lot of times we want what I call the recipe, and really we need to rely on the relationship because God's unique, every situation's different, and no formula is going to fix.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, the reasons for that, we live in a sort of live in a recipe-based culture. I mean, you know, sometimes when going through the checkout line at HEB, you know, looking at the magazines, it's amazing how many articles start out with 12 ways to, or, you know, 10 ways to have better sex, or 12 ways to make him want you more, or something. It's like all human behavior can be reduced to these simple little plug-in things that will always lead to the same result. And human behavior is much more complicated than that.
Well, and there are actually a lot of websites out there that will give people a formula for how do you get your spouse back. And there may be some very good advice, but there's no guarantee. And a lot of times people will, you know, do these things and think, okay, this is going to work really fast, or this is going to make a difference. And maybe it won't, because, you know, depending on what kind of affair your spouse has had, things are going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean,
connected to that.
And that's exactly the problem with those plug-in kind of things. I mean, we've talked about all the different kinds of affairs, and we'll talk about those again on this show in future dates. But, you know, sometimes the very piece of advice that's recommended is the very thing that's going to have the opposite effect, because it's a different kind of affair that you're dealing with. And again, human behavior, and particularly behavior during something as complicated and as emotionally entangling as an affair, is not something that's so simplistic that you can just plug one little thing in and everything's going to get okay again.
Yeah, because if somebody's married to somebody who has a sexual addiction, they may not realize it right away. They may think, well, they've had an affair, and that's that. And so they'll do kind of the things to lure them back, but their mate actually has an addiction. And so that's not going to fix the problem at all.
Right.
It's just going to maybe make them feel better for a little bit.
Let's see if we can't squeeze another one in before the break here. And that's believing that everyone in your life will be opposed to your spouse's infidelity.
Strangely enough, in the culture that we live in today, even a lot of Christians believe that happiness is more important perhaps than what God's word says. And so a lot of times people think, oh, well, their parents are good Christians, so if I tell their parents what they're doing, their parents will say, oh, stop it, and be on their side. And I've actually heard a lot of times the opposite happens. The parents or the friends say, well, I just want them to be happy, I want them to do what they need to do, and they really don't come down condemning them for the infidelity like the betrayed partner would like them to.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of your discussion about happiness, I think that very much in our culture sometimes it's not just seen as a good thing, but it's actually seen as an entitlement that, you know, we deserve to be happy, and if we're unhappy in our marriages, then we have the right to go out and find it.
Even as Christians.
Absolutely. So we will be back to wrap this up. That you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio. Welcome back. We're on the home stretch now of the 20 most common mistakes that the betrayed spouse makes, and we're going to start with up to number 16 now, and that's trying to get all your friends on your side, hoping that this will somehow help your spouse to wake up and see reality.
Well, and this one's a little bit connected to the last one, but a lot of times when a betrayed spouse tries to go to the friends of their mate, the friends actually begin to think, wow, they're married to a super controlling person. No wonder they're having an affair. Now I can really understand it. And so a lot of times it backfires.
Yeah, I mean, some people will actually support them in that decision and help them, you know, you can come stay at my place, whatever you need to do, you know, we're going to, you know, see you through and get you out of this marriage because, again, you deserve to be happy.
Well, and sadly enough, their friend may already know. They may have already expressed support.
Or may have actually been a party to the whole thing somehow.
Mm-hmm. And so they'll just go to the friends, and it backfires over and over. And just kind of at this point, there are a lot of people on this journey to forgive. There may be family, there may be friends. There are a lot of people in addition to your spouse that you're going to need to forgive as
right.
you go on.
But yeah, a lot of people in our culture don't see this as sort of this absolute moral right and wrong kind of thing. I mean,
even as Christians,
that's right. I mean, it's some people see it in a lot of Hollywood movies and so forth. Really glamorize that extramarital affair or that forbidden romance that you're so longing to have, and it somehow makes it acceptable.
Well, and there are even some fairly well-known pastors that have fallen because they somehow got into their heads that, yes, this is what God would want for me, to be faithful to my spouse, but surely God wouldn't want me to be this miserable, and so he'll forgive me. And so it gets very complicated.
Definitely. Number 17 is trying to woo your spouse back, and that's, you know, expecting instant gratitude or immediate results from doing so.
Right, going back to some of the websites that people find online or books that people read that are sort of formulaic, they'll talk about, you know, if you do these things, then your spouse will come back. And sometimes those things will be effective, but it's going to take a while. I've had clients who came in, their spouse was having an affair, they started being nicer to them, they realized that maybe they hadn't been so kind, that maybe there were some things that they could do differently, but they expected them to snap back like in a week or a month. And in my experience with people in my office, it usually takes about 3 months before one half of the couple believes that there's a real change from the other half of the couple. Because in the beginning, it just feels like manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like God's calling you to do these things, you're going to have to really stick with it and really do it for God and be patient and wait for the spouse to come back, perhaps.
Hear, hear. Number 18 is believing that somehow you're blameless and the only one who has to, and or the only one who has things to forgive.
Well, going back to kind of what I was saying before, the spouse who has been unfaithful may have things from the marriage that they're resentful about, that they need to forgive the spouse. It's going to be important for both parties to be able to separate the train wreck, the affair, from the marriage. There may be marital issues that you're going to have to address. There may be resentment. The person who has been betrayed may have actually been pretty harsh or judgmental or unkind, and they're going to perhaps need to make amends to their spouse. But I also, as you separate the infidelity from the marriage, take your part for the marriage, but don't take responsibility for the infidelity, your spouse's infidelity.
Right. I mean, we all contribute to the dysfunction of our marriages, you know, and to believe so other...
Yeah, and even John and I aren't perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
We do this for a living.
Most definitely. Yeah, we could spend many hours on that, but you know, the other side of that, though, is if you are the betrayer, you know, don't take that as permission to immediately start trying to work on what was wrong with the spouse. When there's been infidelity, that really has to be the focus of recovery initially, is really dealing with that and getting that under control. And there will be a time and a place to, like Leslie says, to start addressing some of the things that were wrong in the marriage. But, you know, very often one of the things we see in our offices is the betrayer on the first or second visit starts trying to give us the laundry list of everything they think that their spouse is doing wrong, and once, you know, want the same kind of attention being put on that right then when that horrible pink elephant and that train wreck is right in the middle of the living room.
Yeah, because we've seen God do some wonderful works of reconciliation within marriage. But before you're going to be able to get to the marriage, you really have to deal with the infidelity and the pain that you've caused your spouse.
And that doesn't mean it's going to be open season on you for the rest of your life, you know, that you're constantly going to, you know, have to be apologizing and the other person's going to get a, you know, carte blanche, blank check to do whatever they want, you know, that...
No, but it's going to take a while before they're going to be able to hear about the marriage.
Definitely, definitely. So, rolling on to number 19, and that's believing that your spouse will find you more appealing if you are able to get attention from the opposite sex.
I see a lot of people take this approach. They think, wow, if I can just show my spouse other people want me, we'll go out, I'll dress sexier, whatever, I'll throw myself at people, And just, you know, kind of at this juncture, I want to remind you that if you have discovered your spouse has been unfaithful, you are vulnerable. In your pain, it's very, very understandable that you would try to look for validation, affirmation from other places. I really encourage you to go to the Lord to get that. You're vulnerable to maybe drinking too much, going out, trying to find attention from other men, even if it's, or women, even if it's emotional attention, because it may be that you have felt neglected for a while. I had a client a while back who was on an airplane. She discovered her husband's affair, and she was sitting next to a man who very caringly looked at her and I guess saw pain in her eyes and began to say, oh, you know, you look like you're having a hard time, and began to draw her story out. And she felt very connected to this man very quickly. And so you are vulnerable. So I do encourage you to be aware of that. But making your spouse jealous is not necessarily going to work. And potentially, you could be putting yourself in danger, which kind of leads to the last.
Yeah, and before we get to the last, just want to kind of dovetail on what you said there. Because I think a lot of people don't intend to go out and get attention from someone while they're hurting. But, you know, and whether it's well-meaning people or whether it's people who actually are out there and kind of have that radar that someone's in pain and try to hone in on that, and there are those people out there. You know, a lot of people get caught up and get over their heads with a new person before they knew what hit them. And like Leslie says, I think people, when they're really, really hurting and they feel neglected, it can feel wonderful to have someone pay attention to you, to listen to you, to kind of hold your heart and everything. And, you know, one of the things would say a mistake you don't want to make is believing that somehow you're immune to falling into some kind of affair situation just because you're hurting and it's happened to you. You know, sometimes people don't intend to do that and suddenly find themselves emotionally over their head.
Well, because the biggest way to set yourself up to have your own affair is to tell yourself that you would never do it. And then you casually put yourself in dangerous positions where you're vulnerable to doing it yourself.
That's right. The French say ne dis jamais jamais, which means never say never. So
he talks so pretty. He, like, he likes to impress people.
So rounding us out at number 20, believing if you do the same thing to show them how it feels, it will somehow bring them humbly back.
Strange as it sounds, we have had clients who intentionally went out and had revenge affairs.
Yeah, have you ever seen that work out well?
No, I actually haven't. For the person who has been betrayed, who goes out and has a revenge affair, puts them in a very, very difficult position because it doesn't solve anything, and now they have the guilt of the affair and the pain of being betrayed, and that's just really kind of difficult because you have to get over both.
Yeah, and sometimes it really complicates it in a horrible manner. I mean, I had a client who got pregnant while having a revenge affair and things like that. We've had clients who get STDs while having revenge affairs. And you know, if you think somehow that's going to simplify your life, it won't. And like Leslie, I have yet to have the client who had a revenge affair who really felt good about it afterwards and really felt like it did anything positive.
Well, and bottom line, you know, all of us as Christians are accountable to God for our actions and need to stand before not just God, but our children, and to be able to say, this is who I am.
So thanks so much for joining us tonight. And again, if you're in pain, remember that there really is hope. And do have some grace with yourself if you made these mistakes. Leslie and I have made a lot of them ourselves. And that's
why I was able to write this list.
So have a wonderful Labor Day holiday, and God bless. We'll see you next time.